Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. A couple of people have texted in on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, trying to answer the question that I had before the break. I am dying to know what the average velocity of an NFL pass is. One texter says, according to ChatGPT, I mean, consider the source, the average velocity for an NFL quarterback in 2025 is 50 to 60 miles an hour. However, higher-end quarterbacks throw upwards of 60 miles an hour, like Patrick Mahomes and other quarterbacks of his tier. There was no next-gen stats on Cam Ward, however, with throws. Another texter, Al, says, average pass speed in the NFL is 50 to 60 miles an hour. Tom Brady averaged 45 to 49 miles an hour. However, he has thrown 61 miles an hour before.
Listen, right, there's different types of throws, listen, too.
We crank those things up, man.
The jugs machine. Right?
We crank those things up 70, 60, 70 miles per hour. I mean, that's why you get your hands used to catching a ball that's coming at that velocity. You get on a jug machine. That's why, listen, I understand what everybody's saying about the arm strength. But Dan Marino had one of the best arms in the world. You think he ever took it off? He's just like, man, I got to get any of these tight holes.
Right. That's Elway really could bring
that's
it.
That's the difference between, you know, playing in this league and playing in college is that when you're trying to throw it in a lot of those passes that were tight, they're tight passes. So I can't throw it in there like without any velocity. I got to get it in there quickly. You should – from muscle memory as a receiver, muscle memory and eye, you should be that's what you should be looking for anyway. You should never be surprised in the NFL when you're talking about tight windows, a ball coming too fast. You shouldn't be, because he has to throw it that fast to get it through that window.
D-Mace just has a high standard for receivers
in
general, okay? So I'm trying to put that in perspective.
Understandably so.
But let me say this from the baseball perspective, right? There are guys where hitters will tell you, a pitcher that there are some pitchers who might throw 97, 98 miles an hour, but the hitters are like, it's straight. It doesn't have movement. It's easy to hit, which would be good if you're a quarterback, right? There are pitchers that throw 91, 92 that's not considered very hard in this day and age, but it's got movement, it's got spin, and it's hard to hit. I would think that the same applies to some quarterbacks. There are some quarterbacks that – like we used to, like the one I was growing up, Kenny Stabler always seemed to have that real soft touch.
Yes.
Brady definitely never seemed like he was really gunning it. Drew Brees, you know, they didn't have rocket arms, but the ball was just there. It seemed very catchable. I do think that there are some, regardless of velocity, some guys' ball is easier to catch than others, I think. Don't you think that's
general? In general, I think there are sort of.
And I wonder where Cam fits on that.
Well, let me ask you this question, Derek. As someone who actually has caught passes in the NFL, first of all, just because I'm curious, which quarterback who you played with had the fastest ball?
Whew. Goodness. Boy, oh, boy. I think it would be Joe or Steve, but there's been some other guys in there. Shoot, I can go all the way back to my Tony Banks. Whew, he threw a fastball. So either one.
Are we making too much of this? Like, I find it to be interesting. I really do. And I would love.
It's a key question.
It is.
Long term.
It is.
And that's what this is all about, is long term. They won yesterday. Great. They're 1-4. The coach is under fire, whatever. But in the big picture, these are, to me, the most important things.
My novice opinion on this subject, Derek, is, because I trust you since you did this at the highest level, shouldn't receivers in the NFL be able to catch balls at all different kinds of speeds? Like, that's my question about this. Like, I'm not discounting the fact that Cam Ward seems to throw a hard ball, and that's something that he is going to have to adjust. But I'm just wondering, like, is there too much focus on that when discussing his inaccuracy through five games of his NFL career?
Listen, you're always going to find something, especially with a rookie quarterback, with a team that has been struggling, to try to identify why it's not working. If this passing game was working, then Not to say that, you know, the concern from some people that maybe you should take a look. Not to say that it's not there or it may not, it may be a problem. But our offense is clicking. Ain't nobody saying nothing. Everybody catching balls. Everybody's happy. We scoring points. The ball's getting to the player. The player's getting up the field. That's what it's about. You don't – it's hard to – the only time that comes in a play is, say, if I'm running a shallow cross and I'm really 2 yards down the field going on a shallow cross and I'm building. And the part that makes it difficult – see, this is what people don't understand, and I try to get them to understand it, but they're just looking at, oh, it's a fastball. It has nothing really to do with the fastball. It's the hands that come along that's diverting, trying to, you know, that's distracting you when that fastball is coming. It's not about the fastball because, hell, if there's nobody between me and Cam Ward, he throws a fastball, I'm good. I see it coming. There's no problem. It's just like being a jug machine. But the problem here is that as I'm going across on my shallow cross, there are four or five guys that are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 300 pounds. They're sticking their hands up trying to, and you got to pick up the ball through all of that. So it's not that it's coming fast. It's just there's other things that are in my way that I got to try to fight through to concentrate on the ball. So he has to throw the ball with some type of velocity in situations like that. You don't want it to be every time where he's throwing heaters and you 2 yards away. No, but there are going to be times where he has to do that to get it through the arms of these defensive linemen. Now, when you get downfield, 20 yards downfield, you shouldn't be crying about how hard he threw on the ball because he has to throw it that hard, 15 yards down the field, 10 yards down the field. He has to throw it. Why? Because in this league, from me to you, Willie, if y'all can see this on the YouTube TV, this is a blown coverage right here. This is definitely a blown coverage. Anything closer to that is open. So I got to throw the ball with velocity.
You got to get it in the
window. Yeah, I got to get it in that window.
Let's go to Dustin in Hopkinsville on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Dustin, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. So I'll just say both parties are right. Like, Cam could throw a little softer ball sometimes over the middle. And really what it comes down to is distance between Cam and his receiver, and are they in stride? Are they facing him flush? If they're catching it and it's hitting their chest, yeah, he should be able to throw that ball as hard as he can, and they catch it, and they should put both hands on it. It's like having a third hand. The basket is the chest. The hands pull the ball together, and they hold it there. Cam's just going to have to get better at that. But these are – I look at Ridley and three rookies he's throwing to. Three rookies he has never played with other than these, what, five games?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we have not been throwing to these guys frequently. We've seen the most throwing to these rookies, what we've been begging and asking for, this last game. And it took three quarters, and they finally, in the fourth quarter, something clicked. Gunnar Helm dropped that ball, okay? But then he went back and caught that deep ball, which he had more time to see it in the air and adjust to it. And, I mean – it wasn't like he was watching it the whole time. He turned around, it was right there, and he caught a miraculous catch. But this is up to Borgonzi to go out and get guys with big hands, known to catch the dang ball. You know what you've got in Cam Ward. Big players that help Cam Ward. Like, it's really not a problem for me because, like, I thought you said Patrick Mahomes had, like, a 60-mile-an-hour fastball. And – D-Mace just says that they put it in the jugs machine at 70, 75 miles per hour. This should not be an issue. Once these guys gel, and it's really between the ears more than anything. It's a confidence issue.
Okay, thank you for the call, Dustin.
Let's take that back to you, D-Mace, with the because you've hit on this topic that the caller just brought up, and that is let them gel, right, as they work together. So let's take you and Steve McNair. Steve McNair, no question, he could bring it, right? Mm-hmm. He there was never any question about arm strength. Mm-hmm. How did he evolve on catchability? Did you notice a difference? Because his passing stats obviously grew each year he played.
Mm-hmm. I think with Steve, the more he – because you got to understand, that offense that he had with Les Steckel, it wasn't, you know, it was an offense to sort of help Steve grow. You had a damn good running back in Eddie George. Damn good tight end and Frank Wycheck. And then Chris was, I think that was the year. Chris was the rookie. And that offense was more tailored to running a football, throw it to the tight end, and then we'll take a big shot with Chris. But I
Chris
think
Sanders.
Chris Sanders. Yes, excuse me, I'm sorry. People.
Yes, the same Chris Sanders that we make fun of every week.
Exactly. He was a big play magnet, okay? But then that offense was good to help Steve kind of grow and get him used to the NFL. Then they made a change with Heimerdinger. And that change helped Steve unlock some other things that he had. And once he got used to that offense, the players he was throwing it to, he knew how to take – when to take it off, when not to, when to zip it in there, who I can zip it in there to. So you learn that sort of through repetition with your players. And really it wasn't until that next following year that everything just really started to click.
Yep. So presumably Cam could have that same kind of
thing. Yeah, it could be the same thing, and that's what you want to happen. And the caller mentioned it. He's throwing the three guys that are rookies. You want those rookies to elevate with Cam and develop with Cam.
Quickly, let's go to Tony on our phone line. Tony, thank you for calling and waiting. Please go ahead.
Yeah. I don't think y'all probably was born when this was on, but y'all do remember the quarterback, Joe Gillum. They call him Jefferson Street Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One Monday night, they had a Monday night game. I forget who Pittsburgh was playing. And Fran Tarkenton and Howard Cosell was narrating, calling the game. And Cosell went off into this rant to where Starworth and Leon Swan said he threw the ball too hard. Said his ball, they couldn't catch the ball because it was thrown too hard, but the tight end, he caught everything Joe Gillum caught. But when he got through talking, Fran Tarkenton said, well, they get paid $100,000 a year. They should be able to catch it with their teeth. It's the last I heard, they caught it for free over on Jefferson Street.
Thank you for the call,
thank
Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
That's great.
He's
stuff.
Right. Hey, listen, they paying you this money to catch the ball. You need to catch it.
That is
plain and simple.
For those that don't know, Joe Gilliam, who played at Tennessee State's great teams, there was a time for the Steel Curtain that Joe Gilliam got the starting job over Terry Bradshaw, a young Terry Bradshaw, and they used him a year that they eventually won the Super Bowl. Gilliam started several games in the season, and then Bradshaw eventually won the job back and, of course, went on to be a Hall of Famer. But Joe Gilliam was a heck of a player back in the day.
Oh, man, that was a funny story.
Yeah. Jefferson Street Joe.
I mean, to Tony's point, one texter said, good grief. Is this Charlie Brown texting in? These receivers get paid to catch the dang ball. Just do your job. They are in the NFL and are supposed to be the best of the best.
That's why it's for me, I'm grading it on a much different level.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're watching it, some people are like, man, that was a hard catch or a difficult catch. And I'm looking at it like, no, it's not a difficult catch. Those are routine catches we make in practice. So maybe I need to understand that everybody doesn't see it like me. So and it's not even an argument, but when the conversation is brought up on Cam Ward maybe needing to taking some of the heat off the ball, then, you know, it's like, okay, I get it, but it's hard because it's like, dude, y'all get paid a lot of money, man, to catch this ball.
More than $100,000.
And y'all need to catch it. Y'all ain't catching no – the ball hasn't changed. The ball hasn't changed. It's the same ball that I was catching in 2010, 9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1 that y'all are catching now. I mean, so what's the – I didn't complain about it. And y'all got better gloves than we have.
Those gloves are better. Those gloves are better.
615.
You don't have to use the stick 'em that Fred Biletnikoff used to use.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction on the Tennessee Titans, who win improbably 22-21 against the Arizona Cardinals. Coming up next, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us. He was live in Glendale for the Titans win. We will get his thoughts on Cam Ward's passing and everything else Tennessee Titans related. That's coming up next with Teron Davenport, DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think with Bax Homeworks. Get a free estimate at BAXHomeworks.com. D-Mace Vingan and Donick 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport, who is presented by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. Teron, I want to start with this. You've covered a lot of football games in your life. Was the Titans win yesterday the most improbable win you have ever witnessed?
Man, it's right up there. I would say if you go back to 2012 and the 49ers beating the Saints.
Don't remind me of that. Don't do that. Don't remind me of that. I'm a Saints fan. I don't want to hear that.
Hey, you asked for an example.
I did. That's true. I did ask for it.
Darren Sproles had the touchdown, and Vernon Davis had the tearful touchdown, and Alex Smith, he ran the 25 yards. That was weird. But this one right here, I mean, the 14, it was actually like what? The 24-point swing, right, of what looked like was going to be a touchdown because Ridley was open to it getting tipped and, you know, Lockett recovering the fumble and then the Embarcadero. I said it like the road in San Francisco. You know what I'm talking about, the Cardinals running back.
DeMarcado.
Fumbling out of the – yeah, it was just a mess, man. Very unlikely, but, you know, when you look at that Titans team, they got to take a win any way they can get it.
You know, Teron, I like you too much, so I won't stay mad at you for bringing up that Saints 49ers playoff game from almost 15 years ago. But we were talking about Cam Ward's velocity because Brian Callahan addressed the catchable balls from Cam Ward today at the news conference you were at. We've been having a spirited conversation about Cam Ward's touch on the balls and whether that's contributing to his inaccuracy. When you look at all of the things that have led Cam Ward, the fourth quarter of yesterday's game notwithstanding, because he was outstanding in that fourth quarter, but he still has the worst completion percentage of any qualified quarterback in the NFL. How much of that do you think is on how hard and how fast he throws balls, generally speaking?
I don't think it's all on that. It has a little bit to do with it. You look at the lightning bolt he threw his the Chigakonko a couple weeks ago. You look at the Broncos game, there were a couple ones that got up on the guys a little bit quickly. But for the most part, I don't think that's a huge issue. I think it's more of seeing it on time. You know what I mean? Like, you look at that throw to Lockett on that third and four, I think it was. If he gets that in front of him or even on his body, that's a catch and turn up field to pick up yards. So, to me, it's more on him putting where his eyes where they need to be and just being able to be on schedule with the, as Brian Callahan mentioned, the footwork as well as when he's supposed to throw.
Now, TD, there were more or seemed to be more packages used this game. Do you expect to see that moving forward? Because maybe that was, you know, a way to or can be a way to get Cam in those tight ends because they were critical toward the end of that game. Get he and those tight ends more familiar with one another when you're starting to bring in those double tight ends or those two running back sets. Now you can do it. Two, because you have Tajay Spears back. Now you can go two back sets and still run the football.
Yeah, and that's the key, getting Spears back. You can do different things as far as motioning him to the slot or outside, wherever. And you pass the ball out of a more than likely run look, so you got that. I think you're going to start to see more things, and it's necessary because the packages were more or less limited to 11 personnel. And we know for a long time that's been the base. That's what the Bengals used all the time with Callahan there. The Titans have done it over the last couple of years, so it's kind of the DNA. But I do think they need to use more packages, and we'll see how they continue to do that. I would expect to see it.
Now, we understand that, you know, Callahan had his troubles when he was both coordinator and head coach. But obviously, over the last 2 weeks, he's just held his head coaching duties. How have you seen the change in the last 2 weeks of him? Because to me, listen, they're still not a good team. But I think he's learning how to handle just being a head coach.
Yeah, I think that's something that he is learning, the operations part of it, and just being the CEO and orchestrating everything. That's something that he's learning. And it's, to me, it's good to be able to, you know, have that self-awareness to know, like, all right, this is an area for improvement. Let me get better and do the things, even if it's as embarrassing as giving up the play calling is, even if it's that, he's still doing it for the bigger cause, and that's to make sure this team is in a better position. So you got to respect that. I can't really put a finger on things that have truly changed, you know, as far as, like, what's happening on the field or anything like that. But I will say he does, you know, feel like he's more involved. And even Amani Hooker, he said that today where they saw him at the different defensive meetings, and he's in there as a part of that, which is good.
Talking to Teron Davenport. And, Teron, I got a couple of guys I want to ask you about, because I'm still scouting big picture. Who do they have here? Who are they finding? Who's coming on? I've been pretty impressed with Cedric Gray the last couple of weeks. I noticed his tackle numbers are way up there. He always seems to be around the ball. What do they have in him, do you think? Is he a keeper?
Well, if you go back to pre-draft a couple years ago, I raved about Cedric Gray. There were two linebackers I really liked. And it was Cedric Gray and Edgerton Jenkins, who's over there in Green Bay. And for me, it's the way he always finds the football. And there's just something to that. And I think when you look at the last couple of weeks, you're seeing a guy that's playing with a lot of energy. And it's funny because off the field, like, I joke with him. I call him Cool Grease, you know what I mean? Because he's like a very calm, reserved guy off the field. But he gets on there, and it's like that switch is hit. So you are right about that. I talked to him throughout the season, and the big thing that he said most times, like from the start, was everything is slowing down for him because he's finally able to just play as opposed to thinking too much. And, you know, when you think and do anything, you're slowed down.
On the same token, I want to get your thoughts on Oladejo, because I see him in the picture a lot. He's in the area. But finishing the plays, I see Gray finishing plays. I see him making tackles. Uh-huh. I haven't seen Oladejo make as many plays. What's the next step for him?
Yeah, it's just that. You said it, finishing the play, right? Getting to the quarterback and taking him down. Right now, he's getting some pretty good rushes, and they're kind of getting, production off of that. He's not getting the number, but I think Femi is playing. I have to double-check the snap count because it had gone down a bit over the last three games, and that wasn't necessarily because of Femi as much as it was because they wanted to get more of Draymond Jones and playing inside, and they wanted to get Jahad Ward some more reps inside as well as, you know, where he got the sack yesterday, you know, from the defensive end position. So there's room for improvement. He does have to get to the quarterback, but I think he's showing promise, and that's a good thing.
Could you argue that this is the best Jeffrey Simmons has ever played? How close is this to the best he's ever played?
I think it's the best that he's played, and that's saying a lot because, you know, you remember when he first popped on the scene and, you know, he gave Marshall Yanda everything he wanted, and then he was folding, the Colts guard folding him up like a banquet chair. So you do have that, but you look at what he's doing now, man, the impact plays, like, and he's getting sacks. And I think this dude he's on a mission. I talked to him about his diet. He did a lot of body refinement and stuff like that, and the results are coming. And, I mean, it's, you know, Brian Callahan can't stop raving about it.
I want to ask you one more, and that is on DK, because it really seems like he's starting to – number one, he's kept the confidence. We've seen a lot of young returners over the last few years. You can go right down the list that look pretty good in the preseason. They won the job. Something goes wrong, they lose the confidence, and then they lose the job eventually. He looks like he's getting more confident He's making good plays. He looks like a guy that could be a very successful fourth-round pick, even if he's just a really good return man. Hopefully there's more coming in the passing game.
Yeah, hopefully there is more. Like him running that deep over route from the slot, like I've been begging to see that for quite some time. But you're right. He has been a confident returner. Now, the thing is, he hasn't had that moment, right, where he dropped a punt or a kick or anything like that. So we'll see how he responds to that. But one thing's for sure, he's going to make sure that even in a pinch, you know, when you got guys surrounding you in that little halo right there, you fair catch, he's going to secure the catch. And I think that's a good thing.
Teron, take us inside the Titans locker room yesterday after they won. You've been in a lot of losing locker rooms in recent years. So first question, two-part question. First question, just take us inside. This is actually more of a statement than a question. Take us inside the locker room. I would love to get, you know, some descriptions of what you saw. And I also would love to know what you think this win means, for Brian Callahan. Not so much about the hot seat stuff, but just considering what Brian Callahan has endured, some of it of his own making, what it meant for him to win the game yesterday.
Yeah, so when you look at this game and in the locker room specifically, it was, I'm not going to say it was a party, but guys were happy, you know, and they had the music playing. And obviously it's like that after a win, typically, but you could tell this win meant a lot because this is a team, they haven't won since week 12 of last season. You know, you're talking about 10 games. You're talking about in danger of breaking the streak of consecutive losses for Titans franchise history. Not Titans Oilers, but Titans. You know, so there's a lot on the line. Arden Key was all over the place. Really happy. Daryl Baker, Lajarius Sneed, you know, Calvin Ridley. He took time to talk to us. I think it was just a good environment. You know, Corey Levin was excited. Peter Skoron, I'll put it this way. Guys were present. Couldn't necessarily say that about the locker room every other time. You know what I mean? Like, you really could take your pick of who you wanted to talk to, whereas in the past it's like, all right, well, he's here, so we got to go ahead and handle it with him then, you know? So that was a good thing. As far as for Callahan, you could tell it's a relief. You could tell, and he even said it today, you know, he's like, the coffee tastes better. It's a little bit, it's easier to come talk to you guys and everything like that. So trust me, there's a bit of a relief there for sure.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, has been our guest on DMA's Fingan and Donick. He is presented each week by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. Teron, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
All right, for sure. Appreciate you guys.
Yep. 615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction to the Titans' win yesterday in Arizona. But coming up next, we turn our attention toward another football game that we were all watching this weekend. Vanderbilt falls at Alabama. Where do the Commodores go from here? We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Predators fans, Smashville Live returns tomorrow night at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs at 6 o'clock. Also, quick programming note, Barry Trotz begins his weekly interviews with our show tomorrow at 5 o'clock. But you can go to Smashville Live tomorrow at 6 o'clock at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs to see your Predator star players up close and personal. You can also get autographs and pictures. Tomorrow's guests will be the Knicks, Nick Hague and Nick Perbix. That's tomorrow night at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs and on 102.5 The Game. That was Diego Pavia after the Vanderbilt Commodores lost 30-14 at Alabama on Saturday afternoon. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. You heard Diego Pavia. They've just got to win out. But let's talk about the game at Alabama. As I said, the final score was 30-14. And had you not watched the game and just looked at the score at the end, Alabama beat Vanderbilt 30-14. Vanderbilt must stink. That 5-0 record was deceptive. That's not what happened. Vanderbilt, I thought, guys, showed that they belong in the same conversation as the Alabama Crimson Tide. The Crimson Tide are more talented, but Vanderbilt held its own in that game. The big difference, obviously, Diego Pavia, two red zone turnovers, one with Vanderbilt up 7-0, a fumble, and one an interception with Vanderbilt threatening down 20-14. That made the difference in the game. The Commodores, who had been outstanding in the red zone through five games, struggled to convert in that area, and Diego Pavia was a big part of it. And look, Alabama fans, man, they were waiting for Diego Pavia. They've been waiting for that game. They were waiting for that game for close to a year. And there was a viral video of some middle-aged drunk Alabama fan just giving Diego Pavia the business while some security guard who looked like an extra in a ZZ Top cover band just stood there and let this guy scream at Diego Pavia. To Pavia's credit, you know Pavia, he was going right back at this guy too. That's who he is, even in defeat. But, Willie, my question for you is, where do the Commodores go from here? Vanderbilt does not play this week, hence why we are not talking to Clark Lee today. We will catch up with Clark Lee next Monday as the Commodores prepare to take on LSU.
Are we going to be talking to him at 4 o'clock?
At 4 o'clock. I sure hope so. Okay. I sure hope so. We will talk to Clark Lee next week. But my question is, where do the Commodores go from here? Because their schedule remains tough, but I thought they showed a lot of gumption in that game that did get out of hand near the end. But I thought Vanderbilt showed that they aren't an also-ran in the SEC and that their 5-0 record was no fluke.
Well, I didn't even think it was out of hand at the end. They scored on the fourth down with, I don't know, 10 seconds left in the game to tack on.
Yeah,
that was an, oh, by the way, we cover the spread, backdoor cover kind of thing. But it was a good game for 59 minutes and 30 seconds, really. So you remember what I said last week. I was the most curious to see, in a hostile environment where you everybody knew you were coming, you weren't going to sneak up on them, you were going to get Alabama's best punch. And I do think Alabama played very well. What would Vanderbilt's talent look like stacked up next to the best of Alabama? In the trenches up front, at the skill positions, at the quarterback positions. And it was pretty much what I thought. Alabama has more talent, but the gap isn't nearly what it used to be. And I had a feeling that I did not think I might ever have. And that was, I was disappointed. And you could feel it in Diego Pavia's voice there, in Clark Lee's voice in the aftermath of his press conference. They were disappointed that they didn't take it right to the wire because they gave Alabama the ball back a couple of key times. Those two turnovers, you might say in the big picture, two turnovers, but it was when they happened and where they happened that were daggers. If they cash in on those two, and they didn't, right? Mm-hmm. But if they did, that game goes right to the wire. They were having trouble. I give Alabama a lot of credit. As the second half wore on, they were wearing Vanderbilt down. They started to win the battle up front. They grinded it out. They held the ball. And Vanderbilt had trouble getting off the field. But their defense, I thought, in a bend but don't break, gave them a chance to win. The offense that has been prolific to this point of the season, they're averaging close to 50 points a game. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They thought they could score more than 14. They were very disappointed that they didn't score more than 14. And Diego Pavia, I thought he handled himself very, very well in the press conference. He was mature. He says, it's on me. He didn't play as well as he's played in just about every game he's played for Vanderbilt. Alabama had something to do with it, but Diego Pavia was not sharp in that game, and he needed to be if they were going to win.
Again, it goes back to, you know, when you are not man for man better than the opposing team, then you can't turn the ball over or you can't do certain things and expect to still win. Now, you hope that if you make some mistakes that the other team make mistakes as well, but you can't always depend on that, especially when you're going down to Tuscaloosa, playing in that environment against a good Alabama team. Now, make no mistake, this was a litmus test for Alabama too. This was definitely a test for Alabama because Vandy's a damn good team. And everybody wanted to I think quality, everybody wanted to find out how good Alabama was. It wasn't about how good Vandy is, because people still – Vandy can win against LSU, and people still have their is that Vandy? They still would be something that they would be saying about Vandy. But this was more so about Alabama. How good are you, Alabama? Because we know this Vanderbilt team is a good team. It's a solid team. Does it have a bunch of five stars? No. But they play together just as well as any team out there in college football, meaning playing together.
Ty Simpson, by the way, was
– he played very well.
Yes.
He's hella good. Impressive.
Yeah, that quarterback, he won it for him.
He was awesome.
He won it for him. He played the way they had been expecting him to play all season. They expected him to play that way against Florida State first game of the season. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. He played the way they expected him to play. And Diego Pavia played the way we didn't expect him to play. We expected Diego to go out there and go toe-to-toe with Alabama. And we had no other reason but to believe that. And at times he did. There were times where there was on one play, his running back, I think it's either his running back or he threw a quick screen to somebody. Got about 20, 30 yards. He down there blocking. He's in the middle of it blocking. Like a quarterback just threw the pass. Now he's at the end of the play, 20 yards down the field in the scrum. So – he was doing his part, but he didn't do his part when they needed him the most. It's in the red zone those two times. Because even if you get a field goal on the first one, a fumble, yep. Say you get a field goal on that one. Or you get a touchdown there, but a field goal on the other one he threw the interception to. Yep. You're still up. You still had a lead. If you look at the game the way it went, you get 7 points on that fumble. You get at least 3 points on the interception he's thrown, you're in the lead. And Alabama has to play it different now.
If you told me before the game, Adam, that Alabama would score 23, which is basically what they did, you know, they got the touchdown on the last play, I would say I'll take my chances. I think Vanderbilt can score more than 23 in that. And so Alabama, full marks. I'm very curious to see where Alabama takes this, because I do think Simpson is becoming a really high end quarterback, the way he can extend
plays and
run.
But their run defense is horrible. Alabama's run defense isn't good.
Yeah, but they got better in the second half. They did start to take away some of those big ones that Vanderbilt got. But could this be a good thing for Vanderbilt with a bye week? Mm-hmm. Because they legitimately, you hear it in Diego Pavia. It's one thing to say it, and everybody's like, oh, my God, did you hear what he said? Mm-hmm. He said national championship? Mm-hmm. Oh, people are talking about playoff. Like, I really believe after that game, they are going to even have more conviction and belief
that they can play with anybody.
Exactly. That's a tough place to play right there. Alabama hasn't lost under DeBoer there. All the games they've lost have been away from home. Home against LSU, this is going to be another. Every week they play now is going to be great theater because they're playing good teams. But what can they do? We'll see.
LSU, by the way, Derek, plays on Saturday. The Tigers host South Carolina.
Well, it's another tough game. But, okay, for instance, because I haven't heard anyone say this or been saying this about the Alabama game, and if they have been, then I just missed it. No one talks about – they just look at that score and say that was a blowout. That wasn't a blowout. They don't want to say, well, yeah, but if you really watch the game – That score isn't indicative to what I saw on the field.
Correct.
What I saw on the field was really a Vandy win. That's what I saw on
the
field.
That was the very definition of a backdoor cover.
Exactly. That 30 points, If you watch the game, there were two key plays in that game. Well, really, yeah, two. Stowers had a big drop, too. I don't know if that was early in the game, that crossing, deep crossing. I don't know if that was early in the game.
That was like in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, there was a big drop. Well, he had a big drop coming across the middle of the field, and it was a third down. That's what it was. It was a third down, and it stopped the drive right there. So, but even taking away that.
Stowers also did not have the kind of game that if you think that Pavia and Stowers are their two best players, which you could argue
they are.
Throw
in the other pass catchers as well, Junior Sherrill, Trey Richardson.
didn't quite get – and so that – again, Alabama.
You got to give them credit.
But Vanderbilt, if they can get more from their star players, that's going
to. But the score isn't indicative to how that game really went because Vandy was that game was much closer, and And in my mind, Vandy had their opportunities to win. They gave that game away to Alabama.
I want to know what Coach Willie was thinking when Cedric Alexander ran right up the middle for a touchdown to make it 7-0 Vanderbilt at Bryant Denny Stadium. What was Coach Willie thinking at that moment?
Coach Willie was saying, long way to go.
what was Vandy fan Willie saying?
Well, they got off to the perfect start
for when you're trying
to win.
Yep.
On the road like that, you get off to, that's why the fumble by Pavia was so big. They're up 7-0. If he gets just tackled on that third down, they're going to kick a field goal and go up 10-0. The other big swing I thought was Vanderbilt. You hear Clark Lee talk about it ad nauseum. The middle eight, he calls it. Last 4 minutes of the first half.
That killed. Oh,
so
my
So they score to go up 14-7. You're feeling really good. Hey, offense, Alabama hadn't stopped them the whole first half. They left points on the table. But you got a lead. Alabama has no timeouts. Mm-hmm. There's less than 2 minutes to go. And Alabama, to their credit, they came up with some huge chunk plays and go down and score.
Too much field. They left too much field.
That was the disappointing. That was the one time I was disappointed in the defense.
Yes.
Was to allow them to go down and score a touchdown there.
It was almost they went away from their aggressive nature. And they just kind of sat back and wanted to play it safe. Didn't want to get anything over the top of their head. And it bit them. And they end up getting big plays anyway. Because when you have a lot of space like that in college – I mean, some of these guys are really good runners after the catch, and they get the ball, they're going to get an extra 10, 15 yards. But the fan Willie, I'm going to show you what the fan Willie was doing, what I was doing. I was running up and down through the house as if I went to Vanderbilt. I know my next door neighbor was like, what in the hell is he doing? I was screaming and yelling like, man, you would have thought I played there.
Let's quickly go to Alex on our phone line. Alex, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Comment. You know, the game was closer than the score. We all agree on that. Mm-hmm. But the hitting, the physicality that Vanderbilt brought to the game, you watched a couple of the Alabama backs get hit, and they looked up to see what freight train run over. You know, that's what I – but then again, on the Alabama side, when Pavia run that little fake draw screen or – fake draw play, and they popped him twice, you could see some of the air go out of his sail.
You know, I think
Thank
that's very
call,
observant.
Yeah.
I had that same thought. It was early in the game.
Yeah, that hit he took.
He took two really hard shots, and the second one was by an interior defensive lineman.
Yeah, came from the back. Yes.
And I do wonder if that affected his play at all. You always wonder about that.
I'm sure he's taken big hits before because that's he sort of lives in that world where he's gonna take a big hit because of the way he plays. But the caller's right. Like Vandy, they came with a physicality that you are not going to. If they were gonna lose this game, which ultimately they end up did, it wasn't going to be because they wasn't physical.
By the way, John has corrected me. Alabama was favored, so it was a front door cover. Not a backdoor cover.
Side door cover.
Thank you, John. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Vanderbilt's loss to Alabama. Vanderbilt off this week. The Commodores return to action a week from Saturday against LSU at home. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.